Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us coast to coast This Week in America. Chasing Happiness in an Imperfect World by Xiomara Alvarez is a powerful and gripping memoir that recounts the trials and setbacks she faced over the course of her life and how, in spite of these struggles, managed to find success and her own path in life. Raised in Havana, Cuba during the Revolution, she migrated to the U.S. with her family as a political refugee, moved to New Haven, Connecticut. At 18 years old, she became a single mom, lured by the hippie movement, moved to San Francisco. It was there she joined a commune called the Good Earth for 3 years. Later, she went on to obtain a business degree and joined Fortune 500 companies, including Firestone Tire Company and American Express. Upon retirement, she established Asking Mara Events and Entertainment, focusing on music and festivals. Currently spends her time between Phoenix and Mexico. Xiomara Alvarez, author of Chasing Happiness in an Imperfect World, is our guest on This Week in America. Xiomara, welcome to the program. A pleasure having you with us.
Thank you so much. The pleasure is mine, Rick. Thank you.
I think I said Chasing Happiness in an Imperfect World, which is true, but the title of your book is Chasing Happiness in an Imperfect Life. It's in a perfect life, imperfect world. And her website, yes, by the way, askingmara.com, M-A-R-A, that if you go to our website, you can link on directly to her website. We'll go through that as we go through the program. I'd like to start by talking with life in Cuba. I grew up watching as a child it unfold in Cuba during the revolution there. What was your early life like in Cuba?
Well, Rick, I was born in Havana, and the same year that Fidel declared his candidacy at the People's Party. I was a second child and a brood of 10 children. Mom was young, naive, 18-year-old, and dad was her first boyfriend. He was 38 years old, previously married, definitely a womanizer and an adventurer. Mom always was either pregnant or nursing a baby. It was impossible to nurture 10 children. There's just too many little hands grabbing at you.
Oh, yes.
So, yes, definitely. My sister, Nora, 2 years older than I, took care of the little ones because mom just couldn't, she just only had the one that she was nursing and maybe one other, and the rest of them, you know, they were our little babies. And, I don't remember my mom cuddling me and hugging me. My sister was my mom in a way and my friend. And, you know, she was my protector. And so, you know, it was early teens, then she left and went to live with an aunt who had a little store that she was working at. So I did not see her very much, but, you know, she was holding a secret and I didn't know about it. But I go into detail in the book, Chasing Happiness in an Imperfect Life.
And the book is available wherever books are sold. You'll get information from Xiomara's website, askingmara.com, and links for all this on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. It just adds to the story and what you went through and the remarkable recovery, the resilience you had in changing your life, turning your life around dramatically. As I mentioned, the business degree, the Fortune 500 companies, your own business. We'll go through, touch the highlights during the conversation today, but all of this in detail in the book, Chasing Happiness in an Imperfect Life. You talked about being separated from your family, your father, as he fought in the revolution. What was that like?
Well, in the book, I describe how dad joined Che Guevara and Fidel Castro in the underground. Fidel was idealistic, and my father was an adventurer, so he definitely wanted to be part of it. And so he was recruiting groups of fighters as young as 14 years old, ready to fight when the revolution started. Those were dangerous times, Rick. Families were separated because the enemies of the revolution were out to try to find information about the underground. There was a secret police that was generated by Batista, who was the president and dictator at the time. And he went after family members to access intelligence. One day, my dad left and he disappeared for 3 days. Mom was frantic. We didn't know what happened to him. Finally, he was dropped on our doorsteps. He was had been interrogated. He was tortured. Dad was really, he had a lot of just scars, I can
Yes.
tell you. And he was very scared, and he decided to separate us. And he needed to disappear in order to be not to get caught again. So that's when my family went different places with different relatives across the country. I ended up with two distant elderly sisters and their dad. They lived in this farm in Matanzas, which is a province next to Havana. I was 5 years old and did not understand why I was separated from my family. I felt very isolated from everyone, and I missed the most my sister terribly. I suffered greatly, I can tell you, from that separation. And it would be 3 years before I was reunited with my family again.
Such difficult times that Samara went through, brought out in great detail in her book, Chasing Happiness and Imperfect Life, book available wherever books are sold. Information on her website, askingmara.com, and we've got all those links on our website. How was your family eventually able to come to the United States?
Well, after the success of the revolution, there was so much excitement in Cuba about the future, especially because Castro gave a lot of farmland to the poor people. But what that did is it drove a lot of the wealthy Cubans and a lot of industries out of the country. And that caused the economy to crash. On top of that, the U.S. Rolled out an embargo so other countries that were allies with the United States could not trade with Cuba. So if you can imagine, the store shelves were empty. People were hungry. I remember my little brothers and sisters, all of us. I mean, sometimes we only had like one meal a day, if that. On top of that, Castro consolidated private businesses, and my dad lost his barbershop, ownership of his barbershop. And that really hit him hard. He felt betrayed. He became very angry against Castro after what he felt that he did to help him to win. Then Russia came in to bail out Castro, and suddenly we had Russians everywhere. They were, rolling in tanks down our streets and our
Wow.
neighborhoods. The only good thing was the stores were finally stocked with Russian canned foods. We had no idea, Rick, what we were eating, but it filled our bellies, so we ate it. Then the Bay of Pigs invasion happened, and Castro took a lot of Cuban Americans prisoners. One of them was my cousin, and so, we were all so terrified that the US was going to retaliate. And that's when President Kennedy made a pact with Castro to allow those prisoners and political refugees to come to the US. And if there was family there, they could claim other people that we would be able to leave. And so my dad wrote to his sister, which was one of the political refugees' son. Her name is Marta. And she, with the Catholic Church, claimed us as political refugees. It would take 4 years later for us to be able to be allowed to come to the United States.
It's amazing what you go through, and we see it, we read about this being separated from families, the troops marching down the street, the lack of food, and Samara lived through all of that and brings it to life in great detail and chasing happiness in an imperfect world. What was it like coming to the United States? Was the entire family able to come and you ended up in New Haven, Connecticut? Had to be a dramatic different lifestyle. How was that transition for you?
Oh my goodness, Rick. First, my sister, my best friend, Nora, refused to come. She, at that time, was just 16 years old. I was 14. She refused to come, and I was really heartbroken. But I tell you what, we never forgot the day the soldiers came banging on our door. It was about 4 a.m. We were all asleep. And they scared us with, they came in with their military gear and told us that we had 3 hours to pack only the necessities, that we have been allowed to leave the country. They really treated us as enemies of the government. They called us gusanos, which means worms in Spanish. We were not allowed to take any jewelry, photos, money, anything of value. If anything was found on our bodies or we tried to sneak something out, they told us that we would, our ability to leave would be revoked. So mom and dad were very strict. We were just grabbing the clothes, a few clothes, one pair of shoes. And while that was happening, I told my mom I was going to go get my sister, Nora. So I ran to her house and I begged her to come. But she surprised me and she told me, "No, Xiomara, I love you, but not enough to leave. My life is here." So I felt abandoned, to tell you the truth, but, you know, nothing I could do. We were ready to go. We boarded a bus and to a foreign land, virtually destitute. It would take me 25 years before I reunited with my sister again.
What was that transition like? You go come from this oppressive government, oppressive country, to a totally different situation. I would assume so much more stability in New Haven, Connecticut. What was that transition like? I mean, that's almost like night and day, isn't it?
Oh, it was like night and day. I tell you, the one thing that I remember the most was walking into a grocery store and seeing, and even at Walmart, and seeing all this stuff. It was like, oh, we could not believe there was this much largesse in the United States. That was really amazing for us. Our experience to go to New Haven was different. You know, the point of entry was Miami, and we were cleared by immigration, national security, really vetted my dad, making sure that he was not a spy. And then we boarded small planes to this place called New Haven, Connecticut. And you can imagine, we got there, was in the middle of winter. And in Cuba, the tropics, the temperature.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. What a change.
It was really a change. It was so cold. And of course, we were not prepared for it. We had really no coats or hats to cover our ears. And my cousin, the youngest daughter of my aunt, told me that your ears could freeze. And she says, if you touch them, they'll fall right off. And so I was running around telling my brother, don't touch your ears. Don't touch your ears. But, you know, and I thought the most important thing for us was to learn English, because English is a necessity, especially back in New Haven. There weren't a lot of Latinos. And I was, you know, and I enrolled. I was 14 years old, enrolled in middle school 2 months after our arrival. And in my book, I describe just all the things that I learned and the amazing experiences that I had in the United States, and also the tribulations of teen life in a different country.
I mean, a dramatic change. Yes. Yeah. Finish that thought, because it's overwhelming to think what you went through, that transition from life in Cuba to life in New Haven, Connecticut, not just the weather, but everything else involved in your life. What a change.
Yes. Yes. It was definitely a big change. And, yeah, I was homesick for a long time, but I learned to speak English, and I became my family's translators until they were able to learn the language. But I learned a lot, and I felt that I had a lot of opportunities just by immersing myself in the culture of the United States.
Why did you decide to write this book? When did you decide to sit down, do the memoir? The book is Chasing Happiness in an Imperfect Life. When did you decide to do this, and why?
Well, I decided, I've always had in my mind that I wanted to write down, just as leaving a legacy. You know, we live this life, and then when we're gone, and who remembers? I really wanted to do that. But what inspired me was the love of my daughter and honoring my sister, Nora, and, of course, encouragement for my husband, who felt like I had a story to tell. You know, Rick, my daughter was a blessing and a gift. I learned so much from her. She was my inspiration to the story of overcoming adversity. I really wanted to know her, the decisions I made were for came from a place of love for her. Nora was my guardian angel. Her memory saved me in my darkest hours. She taught me it is up to each of us to overcome adversity. And I felt, you know, by gaining the courage to move forward and my husband believing that I had a story, that I felt that I could tell other people, give them the message that I am proof that you can triumph regardless of the circumstances in your life.
What was it like for you to go back and relive your life? Were there things that you remembered and suddenly as you're writing them down, I would almost think it would be overwhelming at times to realize where you came from and the satisfaction of where you are today. How challenging was that? How difficult was that to go back and recapture all these emotions, the highs and the lows of your life?
Oh, I can tell you, it was very difficult. I many times had to put the writing down, walk
Yes.
away. You know, it was, the emotions came back, you know, but it almost felt like a cleansing. There was a time, it took me almost 2.5 years to go through the, you know, to get the book out of, inside of me and all the feelings. During COVID, I finally, you know, was the point that I said, you know, I am going to sit here and I'm going to finish this because I just need to get it out into paper. So it was difficult at times, very, very difficult. I won't lie to you. But when I got to the parts that I realized that the things that I had been able to achieve as a result of these experiences, then I felt that it was worthy. I also felt that I could inspire others too.
Well, you're doing
Oh,
that
right.
In reading the reviews. You are really touching lives in a very positive, life-altering way. The book is Chasing Happiness in an Imperfect Life by Xiomara Alvarez. The book is available wherever books are sold, of course, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Xiomara's website is askingmara.com. All of this on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Then you get situated here and you go out to San Francisco and you become part of a commune out there for 3 years. Talk about life in the commune and what that what impact that had on the rest of your life.
Oh, boy. So, you know, once my yes, once my baby was born, I realized that I needed help and I needed a fresh start. I had read about the hippie movement in San Francisco. Well, I was fascinated. Like I could not imagine the idea of young people pulling together, helping each other. To me, it just felt like something I really wanted to experience, that I wanted to learn from, especially in San Francisco, which felt like such an exotic place. I had heard about the Good Earth, and the Good Earth Government offers shelter, food, and fellowship to others. And so I decided I was going to go there. And so I saved and saved for 6 months. And I managed to gather $600. And I bought a plane ticket. And with my baby on my hip and a flower in my hair, I boarded a plane. And I landed in San Francisco. And I had took me a while to find where the Good Earth Commune was. And I found that it was a beautiful, beautiful antique home right across the street from the Golden Gate Park. That's the main door, the main house. When the door opened by this man, he had blonde hair and the most kindest blue eyes I've ever seen. Rick, a door opened inside me too. Life at the commune, working together for the good of every member, was something that I wanted to aspire to be a part of it. We had rules, but everyone needed to contribute. So we did gardening, we recycled. The house had many children, sometimes 7 or 8, which was right up my alley.
Yes.
I was in charge of the children. We had a story hour, we had lots of play times. So I really so enjoyed it. And my daughter just was thriving in that environment. Then I started making sewing gypsy skirts. My mom used to sew to try to make money back in Cuba. And so I learned from her, and I made these gypsy skirts and beautiful leather tops, and I sold them in boutiques. And I made apple bread, and I sold it at the health food stores. And then we had concerts at the park on Sundays. Sundays afternoon at the park, oh, it was beautiful. My life changed in the most profound ways possible. I felt like I was accepted by everyone without judgment.
That's such an amazing story, and that story and so many more in Ciamaro's book, Chasing Happiness in an Imperfect Life, book available wherever books are sold. And then from there to a college degree working for Fortune 500 companies, a total turnaround from just several years before. Time is going by so quickly here. Let's sort of sum this up with your greatest struggles. There were many, the greatest, and how you overcame those, because there are lessons there for all of us.
Yes, I believe so too, Rick. I carry a lot of shame. I was sexually abused, and I go in my book, and I talk about my unconscious belief that I was responsible. Somehow I felt like I caused it to happen. But those deep-seated beliefs fuel my shame. And the shift happened when my baby had such love and honesty and the way she looked at me. And I promised myself not to raise her the way I was raised. So change begins really when we question the lies we tell ourselves. You know, life is complicated. If we stop blaming, a shift happens, right? Replacing those negative beliefs with, and so what? So this happened. What are you going to do about it? And for me, it allowed me a new perspective. Honesty made me resilient, and forgiveness made me value myself.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because I think that's so important, the power of forgiveness. And I understand, really, you don't have to be necessarily giving forgiveness to somebody else, but offering yourself forgiveness. How important is that?
That is critically important, Rick. It is all about that. The first thing you have to do is forgive yourself. Know that you are a valued individual and you have a lot to give. Without forgiveness, you can't move forward. You can't let go of all those things that are keeping you down. You got to change the tapes in your head. Forgiveness makes you understand that life is a lot more than just the things that happen to you.
What would you consider among your greatest achievements, and maybe several, because that's like difficult to say pick one, because you have so many in turning your life around to the success that it is to today. What are the top achievements, do you think, in your life?
Well, I think the first one, Rick, is in spite of the struggling, in spite of the abuse, I found my way to build a life of my own design. I defined my own success, what I consider to be my success. Hey, I raised a beautiful human who is loving and kind. And I found, Rick, that my truth, that love and happiness resides inside yourself and not out there somewhere. You don't go chasing out there for it. And that happiness ultimately is fueled by gratefulness. And finally, as I write in my book, you can triumph, not because of hardship, but in spite of it.
You say that some of us survive to grow stronger, while others remain stuck, suffer immeasurably. When we resist, we suffer. When we allow what is, we grow stronger. You really feel what you went through, the bad, really made you, shaped you to be the person you are today.
Absolutely. That is the design of life. That everything that happens for a purpose. And the grit that I learned and the ability to move forward and to rise from any disappointment, that to know that tomorrow's another day, that hopefulness comes from all those experiences that I suffered.
Why should people read the book? What do you hope the takeaway is when they read Chasing Happiness in an Imperfect Life?
I think my book, Rick, is the story of many people out there who live with unresolved trauma and shame. My book shows that honesty and vulnerability are empowering. They are a vehicle to convert feelings of shame into self-love and forgiveness. Life, as I said earlier, is complicated and sometimes is full of pain. But if we are willing to believe hardships teaches us grit and adversity, teaches us resiliency and gratitude. Gratitude, Rick, is the seed of happiness. My hope is that my story can help others rise above their pain and see hope and inspiration in their own life. That would be the greatest gift I can imagine.
I want to take a couple minutes here at the end. We are still discussing Cuba and our relationship with Cuba and how open should we be? Do we cut them off? What are your thoughts on Cuba today? Do you still have relatives, friends that are living in Cuba?
Yes, I have a lot of relatives and friends still living in Cuba, and I have been lucky that I was able to visit them a few times. The people are suffering, Rick, especially after COVID. They just really suffer greatly. There's not a lot of resources. There's not a lot of ways to make money. The government is, the ultimate power corrupts ultimately. It's so true. There's only a few that reap the benefits, and the rest of the people are struggling. I feel that the embargo needs to be lifted. If you lift the embargo, it allows for other countries to be able to come into Cuba and see the beauty and the just as pristine beaches and all the opportunities. And Cuban people are very, very hard workers, and they're entrepreneurs. I mean, they have been able to manage with a poor economy for a lot of years. And so, yeah, I believe that would be so much better for not just for the United States, but the rest of the world to tap into that energy and that creativity that is the Cuban people.
Do embargoes work? You see that and you're thinking, are we hurting the government or just hurting the people?
Exactly, Rick. You nailed it. It is hurting the people. It does not hurt the government. It has not toppled the government of Cuba for all these years. The people are the ones that suffer. It is really difficult. When you open it up, you expose people into much more opportunities. And it would be a way of, I think, toppling that government and opening up to a democracy.
I want to go back just for a second. Growing up, and it was part of the Cold War, and part of that was the Bay of Pigs in Cuba, the Cuban Missile Crisis, all of that. We were concerned here in the country, and as kids, probably, our imaginations were running wild, but Russian troops marching down our streets. I'd go to bed at night, lay there listening for the drums of the Russian soldiers coming into our town. You actually experienced that as a child. I think you said you were like 5 years old. And to see soldiers coming into your home, walking down the street with their guns, do you ever get that out of your mind?
Not all the time. There are times when I dream about it sometimes. It took a long time. I'd suffered from PTSD for a long time after I came. And part of that was all that stress and all that, just being scared.
Oh, yes.
I remember when, the Bay of Pigs happened afterwards, we weren't allowed to go outside to play because we're afraid that that we were going to get bombed any minute. And the same with the Russians. Imagine, I mean, we didn't speak Russian. We didn't know who these people were. It's not like we had a free enterprise in which news were brought, the only news we got was the news that was cleansed by the Castro regime.
Oh, yes.
So we had no idea what was going on. And so, we hid in our houses. We were afraid to talk about it with neighbors because neighbors spied on neighbors. It was a really, really, that was probably one of the most challenging things that I had to get over, the fear of the something might happen that you have no clue or no control over. It's very difficult.
And you see that as you watch the news and families displaced, and every couple of days they have to move somewhere else, and the young children with with no food, and we don't seem to learn from history, do we?
No, it's, I guess it's what they say, that history doesn't repeat, that it rhymes.
Yes, and I wish that we would learn something from it. But the book is so well written, so many stories, so many memories, so many opportunities that Ciamara was able to take advantage of and turn it into a favor for her and a wonderful life that she's had, chasing happiness in an imperfect life. Ciamara Alvarez is the author and our guest. Her website is askingmara.com. All this on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. I thank kingpagespress.com for authors marketing and marketing consultant and arranging our conversation today. Ciamara, hopefully we can do this again. So much more to talk about. Thank you so much for being with us on the program.
It's my pleasure, Rick. Thank you for having me.
It is our pleasure.
Really.
The book, once again, is Chasing Happiness in an Imperfect Life by Ciamara Alvarez. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we are back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.